Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very, very pleased to be able to come to you live and in living color. And this day is no different from others in terms of just, again, always just being very happy to be able to communicate with you, to be able to bring you information and to share views, opinions, but perhaps more importantly, solutions. That's right, information and proposals for actual solutions, because that's what we are really about. We're really about addressing some of those issues that many of us are concerned about, but doing it in a way that focuses on what we're going to do about it. Well, as Doc would often say, we got to be about it, and we are. Before we begin tonight's program, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight, we are going to talk very shortly with one of my brothers who I love so dearly. Unfortunately, we're going to remember two brothers who was murdered roughly 41 years ago, I think it was, 42 years ago. We're talking about Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, who was assassinated in the middle of the night, one being 21 years of age and the other, I believe, being 22 years of age. And we need to really know and understand that even though this thing known as COINTELPRO surely, many of our people are still targeted today. They were targeted. They were targeted because of their political views. They were targeted because they were brilliant. They were targeted because they were so outspoken. And because at 21, 22 years old, they knew that they could not just sit around and let these people do what they were doing and just sit back and act like it ain't happening, like so many people do today, because they have, as they say, no spine. That's right. Well, we're going to talk about that tonight, and of course we're going to, again, remember Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton, and Deputy Defense Minister Mark Clark. We're going to talk about them, and we're going to remember them, and we're going to talk about how the legacy does, in fact, continue today. And with that, we're going to talk with Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. Certainly, the legacy continues with him, but the spirit of both these brothers continue in many of us. And we're going to talk about that and also talk about some of the examples of that, including Mumia Abu-Jamal. We're going to give you some updates on that because, again, there's a lot going on this weekend in regards to Mumia as well. And we're going to also tell you about our program that we had earlier today over at the Fenghai City Community Center. It was incredible. Brother Khoisi Ra was on point as usual and just brought it, you know, like he always does. We're going to give you a little insight into that as well. And thank all of you who came out to support us. Sister Ajua and I, we truly, truly thank all of you, and you know that everyone really got a lot out of that session today, and that's the first of several. I can tell you we're going to keep doing it because we need that information. We need to continue to grow and develop, and folks were definitely feeling it today, and we are going to make sure that we continue in that same type of mood. So before we go to our live line, we're going to open the chat room in about 10 minutes or so. But before we do that, I want to share with you a few words from Chairman Fred Hampton. Again, we're going to be talking with Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. very shortly. But for those who have never heard his father, Chairman Fred Hampton, it's time you do.
A revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the beast.
Yep, that was Jim and Fred. We're going to kind of give you some other quotes or some other things that was that Tammy Freer was known for. You know, it's really unfortunate that in this day and age we think about these things. We remember certainly many of the folks who paid some serious prices for us to be even, you know, able to talk today, right now. It's very interesting, to say the least, that we have several political prisoners who are, you know, incarcerated for some for 25, 35 years. Russell Schultz, Sunyana Coley, Dr. Mutula Shakur. I mean, there are so many who are still incarcerated today, and primarily because of the views and the stances that they took in representing our people, in representing our views, our concerns, and with that, oftentimes helping to bring clarity and insight into some of the things that we need to do for real freedom and justice. Well, the question is, family, what are we going to do? And what I mean by that is, you know, we've said this on numerous occasions before, and that is a people who just sits back and let those who made tremendous sacrifices to just continue to, you know, let them linger there and do not do everything possible to help free them. I mean, what kind of people is that? And you really don't think that other people don't look at that and in that, you know, come up with some kind of opinion as to, you know, what they think about those people. So, again, we need to just give some thought to the fact that, you know, when you have people stepping out there on that front line for us, when something happens, how do we respond? How do we look after their families? And certainly, what do we do to continue to fight to get them free? And that's one of the questions we're going to ask tonight also, and we're going to put that in the chat room as well. But before we do that, again, I want to give you another kind of little hearing or a little snippet here, again, from Chairman Fred. This is taken from a speech that he did, I believe, again, when he was roughly around 20 years old. I want you to check this out.
And if you think about those few niggas, then you ain't going to do no revolutionary action. Forget this about me. I don't know. I don't know.
About, and again, Fred Hammond was 20 years old when he recorded that. As you can tell, it's not the best recording, but there's not a lot of recordings available by him, from him. But the one thing that you heard very clearly is that he said that he knew that he wasn't going to live long, or he certainly wasn't going to die from the regular causes that people oftentimes die from. He knew that. Certainly no one expected it at 21 years old, but nevertheless, his position was to, if he was to die, it was to die for the people, as you just heard. The other thing you probably kind of was able to pick up on is the fact that during that time period, there wasn't a lot of information really readily available about Africa or about African people, especially from a cultural, historical standpoint. So for those of you who have that opportunity nowadays to study and to go to lectures and to read a lot of the books and all of that, that wasn't going on at that time. There wasn't a lot of information specifically about African people at that time. And so we really have come a ways in terms of information, but the point being, what positions are we taking with that information? We have a lot of people that got a lot of information about history and culture and all of that, but what do they really do to fight the enemy? So my point is, family, that during that time period, you had a lot of things that were going on, particularly from an ideological standpoint, that lended more towards what people call as Marxism. Again, there was no real political theory out there that black folks were putting out there at that time. So when you hear certain terminologies, that is some of that has come from proletarian and so forth and so on. Because literally there was not any concrete kinds of things that our people really had out there in terms of a political position. Of course, we had the Honorable Marcus Garvey, who gave us a lot of information and insight about being black and about self-determination and so forth. But what was not there as time went on, obviously, was practical ways and applications that people literally could read and grasp and then, you know, connect those dots. You know, that information just was not available. So, again, these are some of the things that even today have to be developed even to a greater extent. And so I dare say there are those who are, in fact, doing that. But at any rate, we want to pay tribute to Fred Hampton and many other brothers and sisters who were beaten, who were imprisoned, and certainly who were murdered. Again, we're going to talk to Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. in about 5 minutes or so. And with that, we're going to, you know, get some insight into the observance that they held in Chicago this past week in recognition of the assassination of Mark Clark and Chairman Fred Hampton. And we're going to open up the chat room again in about 5 minutes. And before we do, we're going to take a couple of calls. We'd like to know what you all think about how we should not only remember Chairman Fred and Mark Clark, but those who are still incarcerated, and incarcerated because of the positions that they've taken for the liberation of our people, for the justice of our people, that we need to be doing today. And I know that many of you are doing something, but the question is it enough? So what we're going to do is open up our mics, and for those of you who have a comment or question that you may wish to bring forward, please feel free to do so while we wait for Chairman Fred to get with us. We're going to open up the mic at 6029, and again, we encourage the rest of you, if you have some comment or something that you'd like to convey to us, as we also get ready for Human Rights, International Human Rights Day. And we're also pretty certain that some of you have some comments about the passing of Nelson Mandela. I do not want to get into a lot of dialogue about that tonight, to be very honest with you, but certainly if there are some comments that someone wishes to make, you can feel free to do so. But at any rate, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to open up the mic for, again, 6029. 6029, your mic is open. You have a comment for us or something else you can today?
Hey, peace, sister. How you doing?
I'm finding yourself, brother.
Good, thanks. Listen, the question in terms of, you know, is it enough, obviously it's not enough in terms of what we're doing in terms of trying to establish momentum, in terms of trying to address, you know, this insanity that permeates society. I think one of the problems is that the whole question around class. I mean, we continue to have a problem around class in the African community. We have to have find some kind of way in terms of stimulating that kind of discussion. That kind of discourse has to take place. Because unfortunately, you got too many who perceive themselves as being well off, and so therefore they don't see a connection between the needs of the people in their own particular lives. And so therefore, in their minds, they're doing well, so that's all that matters. So there's a certain amount of individualism that exists, you know, in society, which is pretty much, you know, inculcated itself into the minds of so many of our peoples, particularly middle-class Africans in the society. So I think, first and foremost, we have to have that discourse, but the question is how we do that. And probably the best way to facilitate that kind of discussion is organization or pressure on the churches in terms of trying to get them to deal with pertinent questions in the African community. I think that's what I'm going to do first. I think also information is important. It's also a question of disseminating information. And, of course, you know, like anything else, in terms of disseminating information, it's a question of accessibility. So for some of us, we go online, engage in forums like this in terms of spreading information.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of our people, that's just not a reality. So we have to have some type of infrastructure in place, which makes sure the information gets to the people in the communities who are indigent or whatever. So I think those are things we have to do. But until we do that, the problem is that the movement is stalled because ain't much we can do in terms of facilitating real movement unless our people understand exactly what you're doing. Because if you go out front as an individual, you know, and they lock you up or they kill you, do whatever, people never understand what transpired. They didn't even understand the significance of what transpired. So you tend to do more harm to the movement than good, because what happens is the media would take this incident or any type of action, they would take it as, you know, this person just being counterproductive or negative, and the masses of people would then turn hear that or see it on TV or hear it on radio and believe, in fact, that you're just being counterproductive, that you're just a very, very negative person or you're a very angry person, never even understanding the significance of what you're doing and why you're doing it. So we understand that in the context of society, and I keep telling people, you got to understand, and we got to start thinking deeper. These people playing chess. We got to stop playing checkers. We have to play chess. Mm-hmm. But there has to be some sacrifice. So don't get me wrong. I mean, going out there, I mean, listen, there's a price to be paid by going out there. And those of us who understand that, and we're willing to do that, if we look at the people like Fred Hampton, Mark Clark, and the Malcolms, and the Martin Luther Kings, and the Marcus Garveys, you know, and Sunan Akoli, and Tulu McCoy, and Sekou Odinga, and Anthony Bottoms out of Philly. You know, we look at all these people, and clearly, you know, they sacrificed so good about people. And so therefore we take prowess in the fact that the great things they've done, and so we want to emulate that. But we want to be smart about it in terms of making sure that we don't hand our adversary, you know, any means or any way, you know, to undermine what we're trying to do. And so education becomes very, very, very important in terms of moving our people forward. So this is a slow process. Now, I wish it could go faster, but the bottom line is that you only can go as fast as the people understand, you know, the relevance of the struggle. So that is where we are in terms of the struggle. So, but I think also, the terms of issues around the political prisoners, we have to organize around making sure political prisoners get the kind of things that they need while they're incarcerated. You know what I mean? They shouldn't want for anything. We should be able to provide those kind of things. So that's something that we've been working on in terms of, you know, raising consciousness in terms of, you know, facilitating that kind of thing. But again, it's a question of understanding. So unfortunately, a lot of people don't have that understanding. So it's a real paradox, but it's something that we have to do.
Brother, all right, what organization do you work with? Because you indicated that that's something that you are working on in terms of, you know, providing more awareness about the political prisoners. So I'm assuming you work with an organization?
Yeah, I work with African Awareness and Africans in Motion. So that's those organizations
okay.
I work for.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely familiar with African Awareness.
Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Okay, well, you know, again, I certainly appreciate everything that you said and definitely agree as well. Very good analysis, and I'm sure those that are listening, you know, were able to get a lot from that. You're right on point on several areas, and certainly I think in this day and age it behooves us to kind of up the ante all across the board. As you indicated, yes, we obviously have been playing checkers or something even, you know, less significant. But the bottom line is it appears that the time has come when it seems like things happen in intervals, you know, every 15 years, every 20 years or however it may be. And it kind of looks like we're getting ready to approach another one of those time periods, you know, where, you know, certain things can kind of have an advancement. On your point in terms of dealing with the class issue, I certainly agree that something has to happen. I'm not sure exactly what, and certainly by putting more pressure on those churches, I don't know if that's the way to go with it, but certainly we, those of us who have some comprehension of such things, we certainly have to develop what we need to make some kind of representation and to make the type of statements and to show the type of examples that I think needs to be shown. I think we're in a show-me age, you know, telling people about A, B, and C. It has its place, but more folks are into show-me, you know, and I think we have to be a bit more cognizant of that as well. But certainly, you know, the time is upon us to make some moves and to do so in a way that is going to be sustainable, you know. So, and the last point, which I certainly support, and in that support would look forward to working with you and others to assure that our political prisoners are getting what it is. So, you know, again, I lend my services to you and anyone else in doing that type of project to collaborate and, you know, make certain that we are doing the responsible thing and therefore being responsible for such things. So I thank you again, my brother. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Haki.
I'm sorry, Haki? Oh, Brother Haki, okay. How did you say
yeah.
that? Okay. Oh, wow, good thanks. Good thanks, brother. Okay, well, again, it's always good talking with you and always good hearing your analogy. I certainly appreciate that. Let me see. I think we might have Brother Lee on. It looks like we have him on the board, and it looks like he's trying to get in. So let me check and see if we have Brother Lee on this line. And Brother Lee, do we have you on here?
Well, it's a good greeting, African. How you doing?
I thought so. Good thanks, brother. Good to hear you also. So I see you have a response or a comment to add on to Brother Haki.
I just want to add to what he said, and I hope that we really take heed to this, because it's unfortunately that we don't really look at our history, use our history as a guide map for future actions for our people. And today, the two critical things I think that we are lacking that must be done, and one of the things that African Awareness and All African People Revolutionary Party, GC, is trying to do and is doing, is to wage an ideological struggle among our people and among the enemy. That's the greatest struggle. It's more greater than economic struggle. We keep confusing this relationship between political struggle and economic struggle. And when I say political struggle, I'm talking about the realm's ideas. The brother is clear. If our people on the mass level don't understand ideas, they will use your energy and your actions against you. We need ideological struggle, ideological clarity. That's what we have not done. And once is held or beholden by the masses of the people, you now have the basis to change the material conditions of your reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, we're going to Cuba next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
People still don't understand the importance of why we're going to Cuba, why we have, need to have a relationship with it. That's all because there's a lack of political education among our people. Because without ideological clarity, it gives you a better understanding on how the world works and how do you change it. And that helps you to organize your strategies and your tactics in terms of setting priorities, which ones come first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the arrows of the downfall of the Black Panther Party. That was one of the, at least one of the issues that Fred Hampton raised within the Black Panther Party, of the mm-hmm. necessity to have ideological struggle among ourselves, first and foremost, and then teach that to the masses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the enemy understands that's the greatest weapon, the most important weapon. It's more important than even going to war. Because war comes in different form. But, you know, when you have your ideological struggle and you understand your ideals first, everything else will fall in line. And the only way you can maintain that is through some form of institution. In this case, we say organization. That's the only way you can do it, to be consistent. Where you can look at the errors and correct your errors and move forward. Then you make another error, correct it, and continue to move forward. So now until our people on a mass level understand the importance of organization, and we need some political, ideological understanding of the world. We have very little understanding of capitalism. Very little. But that's what's causing and shaping, that's what's causing the ills among our people globally. If we don't understand its history, its forms, and how it weaves and evolves, and different distinctions, but in essence, they're the same. But all that will lead to ideological clarity, and when you have organization, the major thing is to really create a cadre. We don't have cadre. We have cadres, but we don't have enough. We don't have a critical mass of cadre, those who can understand ideas and take these ideas and make them grow on a mass basis so that people can begin to change the material conditions of our people. This is the major task and objective of the All African People Representative Party, GC, and probably most any conscious political party. And first and foremost, you must maintain the valid cadre. So whatever we're doing at this stage of development, that should be a high priority of developing political cadre, ideologically. It's not about trying to develop millionaires and get business. That will come to play later. Because even when you do that, you don't have no clarity. It ends up, your resources end up being used against you. And you can't maintain it anyway, because you don't mm-hmm. have, you don't have the essence of sustaining it. Because the most important thing is all your acts comes ideas. And that's why Cuba is important. And look at how they waged their struggle, what has allowed them to continue to be self-sufficient, even though they're fighting the most powerful country in the world today. Ideologically, they can't beat Cuba. Militarily, they can bomb them off the face of the earth if they choose to do that. Mm-hmm. But what would they win if they do that? If the aim is to control the resources, particularly human resources of the people. So this mm-hmm. is the critique that I bring in tonight to your audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Brother Lee, as usual, are you always, you know, quite poignant, and I truly again appreciate that. You know, again, as we move forward, I believe it's December 10th, the observance of International Human Rights Day. You know, our position here at New Day, and of course with the Million Woman Movement, is now to assert as much as possible the issue of what we call natural and human rights. I indicated earlier I was not going to have a lengthy dialogue about the passing of Brother Nelson Mandela, but since I have both you and Brother Haki on this line, I'd like to hear your comment, particularly as it pertains to the land issue. You know, I've heard a lot of things said over the past couple of days, and of course it should be. But, you know, again, we are realists when we have our dialogues, and I feel, you know, I would be remiss if we did not point out very clearly that, you know, there are some issues that still need to be resolved. It wasn't resolved then, it's not resolved now, and one of the issues is, of course, land. What do you brothers feel about that?
you got
yeah, you absolutely. Oh, let me take it. Okay, sure. No, no, the sister's absolutely right. The land question is a pivotal question. It's a question. With the land question, you can truly talk about the issue in terms of liberation. See, liberation doesn't truly exist without one or two things. One, land, and secondly, economic, controlling economics. Mm-hmm. So therefore, mm-hmm. in that context, when we look at South Africa, clearly South Africa is not liberated. Now, keep in mind, historically, when you look at the movement in South Africa, there were two leading figures. There was Nelson Mandela and Robert Sobukwe. Now, Sobukwe's mm-hmm. position was that the primary problem in terms of, you know, the question of liberation, it's a question, number one, first and foremost, Africans have to deal with in terms of Africans have to struggle with themselves in terms of dealing with that question. And secondly, there can be no compromise with respect to the question of land. Mandela come from a different perspective. Mandela come from a more class-based perspective. His position
right.
is that we're all South Africans, and so therefore, you know, we simply can change political leadership, then everything should work itself out. I mean, that is fine in terms of theoretically speaking. But the bottom line mm-hmm. is that as we understand capitalism in terms of how it works, that it's all based upon resources. Those who control the resources make the rules. And so, therefore, what has to be pivotal in any kind of discussion in terms of liberation is the question of land. And so, therefore, mm-hmm. consequently, Robert Sobukwe constituted more of a threat than Nelson Mandela. So when Robert Sobukwe was in Robben Island in South Africa,
right.
he was isolated totally. He wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. They isolated him totally. That's what they respected. They understood where he was coming from. Mandela, on the mm-hmm. other hand, was allowed to congregate from time to time with other prisoners on the yard, particularly the limestone mm-hmm. quarries that they had digging up limestone. So he had an opportunity to engage, you know, other prisoners. So clearly, even then, the apartheid government, those who represented the elite, understood in terms of the inherent threat in terms of what Robert Sobukwe represents. Consequently, today, elites all over the world don't talk about Robert Sobukwe. They only talk about Nelson Mandela. That's
right.
the reason they do that. That's not to take away anything from Nelson Mandela. If one thing he demonstrated was that, you know, the system is cold and ruthless, and it's international. He did expose that much. For people who didn't understand that prior to, they now understand the system is international, it's cold, and it's ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
And because we talk about globalism, we got to be very, very clear that the system may have fewer and fewer needs of larger and larger number of people. And because they don't need the people, the question is, the existence is esoteric. And, of course, the question is, how do you get rid of these people you don't need? And this is the question that is so pivotal to our people, because so many of our people are working-class people. The question is, you know, what do you bring to the table? Do you have wealth? Do you have a particular skill that we can use? Well, if we can't make money off you, what good are you? Your existence is esoteric.
Okay.
So consequently, and you find the system, everything has become privatized. But like I told some brothers earlier, privatization is simply the manifestation of a declining global economic system. And our people mm. got to be prepared to understand that. Mandela's position was that he didn't deal with that per se. That was Robert Sobukwe in terms of the more international perspective, in terms of the oppression
mm-hmm.
of African people globally. So that is
mm-hmm.
the thing in terms of him, yeah. And so I got an opportunity to talk to a lot of political prisoners in South Africa. I was there 3 months ago, and
mm-hmm.
I got an opportunity to talk to former political prisoners, and a lot of them are very, very angry about the fact that the question in terms of the land question was never even addressed. And when I asked a couple of them, I said, you know, so during, you know, the negotiations with Mandela, the discussion of land come up. They said, brother, they weren't even allowed to even talk about it. It wasn't even allowed to be brought up. Even now, they can't even discuss. They made an agreement that they can't even discuss the land question now. So some of them are saying they're willing to go back inside the second revolution in terms of what they call neo-colonial struggle, in terms of fighting against Africans in power who refuses to concede the question in terms of, you know, the importance of land. So they're still very, very upset over there in South Africa in terms of what transpired. They like the fact that the brother was freed, but under the circumstances,
mm-hmm.
they have some questions. They have some real problem with that. So the struggle by
yeah.
South Africa, by no stretch of imagination, is over it. The land question is pivotal. Because when I was in Cape Town, let me tell you, the situation is probably just as deleterious as it was prior to Mandela's release. The townships
mm-hmm.
are growing leaps and bounds. I mean, it's deplorable. The white folks are still
mm-hmm.
living well, owning 90% of the resources. The black folks
mm-hmm.
in Cape Town, after 5 o'clock, you don't see any black people. They're all on the trains
mm-hmm.
and the buses going home to the townships. So you don't even see any after 5 o'clock. It's just all you see is white folks, you know, smithering of Africans further, you know, further to the city, in the, what they call center city, You see a smithing of a small number of white black folks, African folks, you know, in that area. But that's basically
right.
it. And the better housing stock is all white. They make damn sure African people can't move in, because what happens is that they elevate the price of the homes and the rent to make sure the African people can't afford to move there. So it must change in South Africa. So the land question is very, very pivotal. It's not only pivotal in terms of the aspirations of Africans in South Africa, it's equally germane to Africans living right here in America. So the land question
right.
is very, very important. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brother Hakeem. Brother Lee?
Okay, I'm going to put mine this way. It's the same thing, maybe in a different form from Hakeem. Number one, let me just make the statement. Individuals don't make history. Only the masses of the people make history. There are no such thing as a great man or great woman. There are individuals who make valuable contribution to a people movement, but those who truly make history must properly understand that it's the masses that make history. Because if you talk about any individual, regardless who they may be, if they don't have other folks who in harmony with the ideas and the principles that they value and willing to carry them out, nothing will take place. It will not materialize. Matter of fact, most of them will be hung if other folks did not come around them and organize around the same sets of ideas. So in that sense, we got to understand, again, it's the masses that make history. I like to look at Azania, South Africa, from the point of view of a people movement in terms of organization. You can better understand it. Earlier, you had one of the most dominant political parties in terms of its inception in the area back in the early 1900s, the African National Congress, ANC. Later on, because the internal struggle around this question of Africans had a right to own and control their own land, evolved out of that, the Pan-African Congress, another political party, PAC.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other line, you'll find other variations of this struggle, where you create the Black Conscious Movement, BCMA, and the Azania People's, AZAPO organizations. Those are probably the four of the key political parties we need to look at when we talk about the movements in the history of Azania, South Africa, to try to come up with some kind of understanding of today's realities. But as Brother Hakeem said earlier, you'll find that these struggles are all around one familiar question: who are the rightful owners of the land, and who should control the resources of their land? And it's unfortunate up to this point, the ANC, in terms of their ideological and political line, has won out. Which is they are a nationalist organization, but not in the context when it comes to the land question. They reign the land or run the land, the land belongs to all of them. Even the Boers who came from Europe, who came there and settled, and took the stuff from indigenous Africans. As a result of that, we can see the consequences of the powerlessness of our people in Azania, because land is the basis of everything.
Right, that's right.
That was walls our foot over. That's what the U.S. government has a history of, going all around the world to do what? Take people land.
Yep.
So in that sense, ANC up to this point has been the most dominant party politically. But look at their political line and their ideology, it has created problems for our people. Our people is in a state of powerlessness because they have not dealt with the land question. This is one of the issues the PAC and Black Conscious Movement is still waging a struggle to fight around. It's just been temporarily look like it on hold, but the struggle always continues. And this rally is not won yet. We know, our forefathers have taught us, that if land were taken with the gun, then have to be given back. You have to get it back with the gun. This thing about the voting thing, all this nonviolence and appeasement stuff, history has shown us that this is the way it's going to have to be won. So this is a temporary thing before the bloodbath really begins, because it's going to have to begin, not only inside of Azania and South Africa, but also in Africa. Now, Nelson Mandela, he's a really interesting person. Because a lot of times when we create models or images of people greatness, some of it more myth than reality. I think you should ask the question and talk to the African people, in particular youth, and Azania themselves. Ask them, what do you think of Nelson Mandela? And see what their version is versus what you get in the media in the West. Remember, the same folks who now are giving him praise, they were the same folks who were against him and call him a terrorist. Now, what is that all about? But I think it'd be really interesting if you do your research and talk to the brothers and sisters back home across the board, particularly youth, and tell them, you write, if you had to write a history of Nelson Mandela, what would it be? I think you might be surprised. Because there are some serious contradictions people have to ask themselves about individual roles in this particular movement inside of Zambia and South Africa. If you have a brother who was in the same struggle that you were in, sacrificed and bled like you did, and went to prison like you did, and you was in jail together for you know, 20, 30, 40 years, but you managed to get out first, and then you become the most powerful man in the country, become the president, and you don't have no power, or you choose not to fight your other brothers and sisters who linger in prison with you for the same cause. What does that say? How do you explain that? Someone gonna have to explain that contradiction. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Speaking will. And we gotta understand history. And people rose. But anyway, so that would be my general take. You know that. I'm just, you know, there's some positive, negative things and everything. But I think the deal was cut a long time ago by the West to get him out of jail and allow him to play the role that he played, because what he did was delay and Evelyn would have to take place. And that's the real battle for the land, for the people. South Africa today, the Africans at home are more oppressed and poor today than ever before. Fundamentally, you have a small class of so-called middle-class elites, but they serve as buffer for the real thing, for the real battle to really take place, and it's coming.
All right, Brother Leroy, thank you for your comments. We have Chairman Fred now waiting to come in, and so I want to thank Brother Lee and Brother Haki, because we're going to have some more dialogue in regards to some of what's going on globally as it pertains to our people. So be tuned for that, because we're going to continue that later on this week. But what we want to do right now, again, is go back to the issue and the topic as it pertains to political prisoners, of course, which is what we've been talking about. Even in the context of Nelson Mandela, that was kind of a continuation of us talking about political prisoners here in the U.S. and what it is that we need to be doing nowadays, more so today, in regards to that. And, of course, starting us off tonight, we said this is a program that is to remember, pay tribute to Chairman Fred Hampton and also Deputy Mark Clark and others who gave the ultimate. And we must never really just let that, you know, go past as if it never happened, and certainly to remember that while we do not hear the word COINTELPRO today, certainly there is something out there that is still targeting us. So again, I want to thank Brother Lee and Brother Haki, and hopefully you both will stay right there. And we're going to talk now with Chairman Fred Hampton, but before we do, we want to remind all of you that the chat room will be open in about 5 minutes. Please feel free to place your comments or questions there as we prepare to talk with Chairman Fred, who's going to give us an update on what went on in Chicago recently this past week, as every year they do a commemoration in regards to the assassination that took place. But also we're going to, you know, hear some other things that's going on in Chi-Town, similarly to what's going on in other places. But before we do, we're going to share a few more words with you from Chairman Fred Hampton. Hopefully they will let me keep it going.
Right. You're talking about it right. You know, it's not on the paper. We didn't write it on the paper. On the right. No. Let me tell you now. You're the end of the revolution with no education. And on the end of the end of the day, you're going to go to the motherfucker and say, well, you know, so you can get hate the enemy, but I'm your brother. I let him lead the revolution. I'm more prison. Another example, Papa Doc Diddy. Papa Doc Diddy, he did everything way. Man, you could put...
Okay, we have a little technical difficulty, so bear with us.
A lot of people, you know, he had it all, not a, he never a revolutionary, but an anti-revolutionary. So Papa Doc, he called him a revolutionary, saying, you know, the mom, I was a bitch. That's the city, but all that kind of action. He said,
okay, we're going to pause there for now, and we're going to try to realign that so we can get a better quality on that. But at any rate, that is Chairman Fred Hansen, and as you can tell, Reverend was extremely, extremely articulate, very clear on quite a few things. And needless to say, you know, the legacy does, in fact, continue. So with that said, what we're going to do is go to our live line, and as indicated, we're going to talk to Chairman Fred Hansen, Jr., and I think we have Dr. Randy Short sitting in the wings here as well. We're going to bring him in shortly as well also, but we want to get Chairman Fred in, and let's see, we're going to open up his mic right about now. We got you, Chairman Fred. How you be tonight? Uh-oh. Chairman Fred, can you hear me? All right.
Hello?
We are having...
Hello, Empress?
Oh,
Empress?
We got you. All right.
Right on. Right on. We're with you live and direct. Yes, indeed. And, as again, as always open up with you. You know, it's always a pleasure and honor to be able to, you know, hit the airwaves with you. Revolutionary appreciation to you, to the listeners, and to the people in general.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, brother, it's always good to connect with you, you know. Oh, wow. So another year has passed, and I was talking with you briefly earlier, so it seemed like it's been a lot going on up that end.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We have had a minimum amount of rest prior to that and since that of December the 4th. This being the acknowledgement of the 44th year, the commemoration of what happened approximately 4:35 a.m. 1969 on the west side of Chicago, and we are still, as what Chairman Fred would say, high off the people. A phenomenal amount of support that people from all walks of life throughout the world that came in to go to ground zero. And no, I'm not referencing that of New York on September 11th, but I'm talking about one of our September 11th stories. Again, one of our many September 11th stories, that in which two of our twin towers fell. Speaking of 21-year-old Chairman Fred and 22-year-old Defense Captain Mark Clark, who were brutally assassinated by the federal government via the Chicago Police Department. And we've seen a powerful testimony, again, people from all walks of life, all ages, who came to that spot on the west side of Chicago, sending a statement to not only to the city of Chicago and its administration, but sending a statement throughout the world on this IRD, International Revolutionary Day. We have not forgotten the contributions of that of Chairman Fred, Defense Captain Martin Clark, and organizations that they represented, that being the Black Panther Party. And we would not sit back silently as our people and our freedom fighters are continuously being attacked. And we would not talk about this situation in some sort of abstract, nostalgia type of way. And we're going to make some concrete connections. And we understand that terms like revolution and revolutionary are not no bad words. In fact, they are, it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
I know that's right. I know that's right. So listen, from what I'm hearing, there was a film kind of shoot that took place this year.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Let me premise with this. Let me give a little backdrop. We are always, when I say we, I'm talking about the POCC/BPPC, the Black Panther Party Cubs, in coalition with the December 4th Committee, which is chaired by my mother, comrade, Akua and Jerry, formerly known as Deborah Johnson, and many other coalition organizations that we work with. We are continuously keeping our ear to the ground, seeing what's phenomenal in which we can take it and win the people to get engaged in this conversation. Because there has been a message sent to our children in particular and our people not to talk about who Chairman Fred was. And this is not just a happenstance. This is due in part to the fact that law enforcement officials consistently shoot up the tombstone where Chairman Fred is buried at. This is due law due in part to, even myself as a child growing up, I would get suspended from school for simply writing about Chairman Fred of the Black Panther Party. This is due in part to we in our workplaces and our family reunions and our day-to-day conversations. We have been taught to whisper or, you know what I'm saying, or go along with people when they obliterate or malign the legacy of such organizations with such incorrect slander, with such slanderous statements as Black Panther Party was just some race-baiting organization or a gang or something of the sort. So we have to find innovative ways to win the people to engage inside with this discussion about who these freedom fighters was, who this organization was to implement the first free breakfast program. So we have, in the past, we've implemented such tactics as the fight for the street sign, the street to be named in his honor, Chairman Fred. The street sign was a tactic to, you know, to win people to engage in the conversation, you know what I'm saying, in which we're still seeing ever-developing responses from that campaign about that fight to have a street named in honor of Chairman Fred. We've worked with different artists before, you know what I'm saying, we refer to the code of culture, where, you know what I'm saying, ease some of the Chairman Fred speeches and the music and technology. You know, at the same time, I want to stress this, without compromising who Chairman Fred is or who he was. This year is no different. We have strategically vetted and corrected a number of different forces who have, you know, entities who have tried to water down the legacy of Chairman Fred. But we've put our ear to the ground, seeing this is a phenomenon about this, the movies, in particular depicting our history within our community. And some years back, I spoke about it before when I was, more than some years back, I was about 12 years old. I remember somebody trying to approach my mother, comrade, about doing a movie in regards to Chairman Fred. And her principal position of refusing to go along with it because it was an attempt to co-opt the legacy of Chairman Fred and make the police, in fact, to be the protagonist, the good people, and show some sort of humanity to the police. And I remember her principal stance she took about that. We have gained some ground. We got, you know, we got some forces who respect, who have some political unity with us. So this is we are putting together a project in regards to depicting the life and times of Chairman Fred for a number of reasons, to combat the continued attempt, the continued assassinations on Chairman Fred, whether it be through bogus books with fictitious authors, or it be people, you know, trying to give an incorrect history on what happened. So we are we understand that our community does not read as much as we would like it to read. So this is one of the many tactics that we're putting together, and this is a movie we're putting together regards to life and times of Chairman Fred. And we're going to be in direct political control of it. We have won certain forces as Mos Def, also now known as Yasin Bey, to play a major role in the movie.
Right.
The Lady of Rage, Robin Allen, my mother comrade, which she'll be playing Deborah Johnson, who is now known as Akua and Jerry. The potential cast is consistently growing. We just got some commitments from his brother Face, used to be known as Scarface. Got a few of comrade Jamil, a few of my fellow comrades, you know what I'm saying, they're going to, you know, be in it also, and the people are going to play a major part of this. In fact, December the 4th, we had a reenactment scene where people had came to the house to see what happened, and we had a reenactment. It was so many youth in particular, but people came to see, to that same location, to reenact where the people came to see what happened December the 4th, 1969. So then we also reenacted the scene where people went to the funeral. Those are two of the scenes we filmed December the 4th. We got some more upcoming scenes we're working on. So we're gonna definitely keep you and the people abreast how this is moving. And this is going to be a major people's propaganda bomb. A people's propaganda bomb. This is going to be a major people's propaganda bomb. In the response, in the stage in the game, where we have seen so many movies where we are served and we are slaves, we'll be butlers and so on and so forth, we want people to see how we fought for self-determination. So we're going to be struggling. This is going to be a major tactical move that we're doing.
Ooh, I love it. I love it. So I know it's probably difficult to pinpoint when you think it's going to be released, but do you have like any kind of estimation? Because I'm already like, wow, when are we going to get ready? See this?
Right on. We brother comrade called me yesterday. He said, "Chairman, I missed the film shooting yesterday. When is the next one?" I said, "Well, we really work with a guerrilla get down type of itinerary. In other words, we don't have a shoestring budget. We're dealing with a barefoot budget, and so we see all the time when people come in town. We got I want to commend the forces already who have committed to it. It's a true labor of love. That, you know, a lot of forces are committing their talents and their time to it, and so I mean, I'm hoping that, you know what I'm saying, by next IRD, we have, you know, at the latest, we had this ready to roll out, you know what I'm saying. We're going to seize the time with different, we're going to tie this in with the work that the POCC is engaged in on a day-to-day basis. So when we go different places to deal with different campaigns, we're going to try to see how we can, you know, intertwine this with the film project. Because it's going to be rated R for reality, and we do recommend that your children see this. So we hoping by at the latest next IRD, next December 4th, just be, you know what I'm saying, rolling. And again, it's the support of the people and the way things are moving, it's been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's even the educational process, I've been learning so much stuff even just by going through this process. It has opened up a lot of discussion with a lot of people. I got one brother whose father was in one of the major street organizations. And he told me, he said, Chairman, my father never told me all the stuff how the Panther Party impacted them. This has opened up some discussions with them. And it's been some people got clothes, some sisters and brothers, they got clothes from their parents and their grandparents to be extras in the movie. And the stuff is once it's picking up, it's like a floodgate of energy. So don't hold me to that next year date, that next December the 4th date, because this stuff is picking up. And again, the momentum, people are coming, calling and saying, how can we be involved? People provide information, updates from brothers and sisters in the barbershops and beauty shops to cats we got on the street corners. People have called and said, man, let me tell you some of these real deal authentic war stories on how Chairman Fred impacted this, the role he played. And we can never tell a full story on Chairman Fred. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna have to put some cutoff time on this. But we see it is pressing. It is essential that we get this out because people need to understand this. Because, I mean, still today, people are still surprised to hear about him being assassinated at the age of 21 years old. Still today, people are surprised to hear about the FBI targeting him when he's 14 years old, but recognizing organizing capabilities. Still today, people are surprised to hear about him, or, you know, under his leadership in Chicago branch with a free breakfast program, feeding a minimum of 3,500 children a week. So it's inspiring to people, and it's energizing to people, not only, you know, saying, for Vanguard Forces, for leadership, but the people in general. So again, it's picking up and it's moving full steam ahead.
Wow. So for those who are not familiar with the assassination, we're just going to kind of recap just briefly for you all and suggest that you please visit Chairman Fred Hammond Jr.'s website. We're going to give you that information as well. But there's a lot of other information online, again, for those who maybe just becoming familiar with what happened on December 4th. And the location for Chicago, of course, was 2337 West Monroe. And this is where you all assembled on December 4th of this year, as you do every year. Is that correct, my brother?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, again, it's so important, and the tie-in is, again, when we talk about political prisoners, you see, there is a direct link and a direct tie-in as to why you will always hear the Black Panther Cub, the former Black Panthers, some of them, that is. And again, I have to really reference that in that regard, because we have to keep it real here. You know, I've often heard, I've sometimes heard of former Black Panther members say that, you know, they were former Black Panther members. And unfortunately, at least here in Philadelphia, it has tended to be a little misleading or a little misguiding, because for those who don't study, they tend to think that these people are still doing something today. And you know, I'm here to help set the record straight that that ain't always true. Okay, so when we talk about the direct link for those who literally did do things and political prisoners today, it is because those who are political prisoners today were in fact doing things then as well, and they're there as a result of the work. Hence, that's what's connected to those who unfortunately were in fact murdered. So, you know, again, it's very important in this day and age, as I'm sure you will agree, Chairman Freed, that we help to bring about some clarity, because it creates too much confusion and too much misinformation when we think one thing, or when certain information is put out there in one way, and then the mass of our people who maybe, again, aren't as acquainted with things begin to perceive them in a certain way. And let me clarify that and give a perfect example, because I don't have any problem doing that. There's been some problems with people in Chicago, such as Bobby Rush, correct?
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Premise and put some backdrop in, and just retouch on some extremely important points that you raised. Clarity is so important, and it's a continuous struggle not only within our own community, but people universally. A lot of times, this whole issue of liberalism, in other words, attempting to straddle the fence, or don't call certain questions, or don't say certain things, and, you know, hopefully everything just, you know, resolve itself. And the deal is, when you're under attack, when there's a war being waged upon you, that is a luxury that you cannot afford. Because the deal is, a system such as this system, such as this parasitical system that our people in particular, African people in particular, have been and remain to be subjected to, any loose ends that this system sees, any liberalism, any lack of crossing the T's or dotting the I's, this system will exploit that, whether it be from us not taking a position, to be very clear that Reverend Nat Turner was a freedom fighter. He was a revolutionary. If we take the position, well, okay, then he was just one of the preachers around there, this system will exploit that, and next thing you know, he will be slandered as some sort of crazy madman. A lot of times we have to be very careful. I say it on occasion that I think we speak French too much at the wrong times. We all together, and we all do not have the same interests, and we must understand that we all do not have the same interests, and we can try to seek to find times when we can find common goals or points of unity. We can form these ad hoc committees to say. But it is insane to believe that all of us have the same interest. And I am an advocate for that of self-determination, to be able to speak on our own terms. I caught bits and pieces of the conversation that was going on prior to me coming in. And I heard something in particular in regards to, I may be paraphrasing it, but contact the people in Occupied Isania in South Africa. Ask them what's their position about Mandela. And I respect that so much. And I tell us, we have opportunities to talk to people directly. You know what I'm saying? This precious entity, again, of self-determination, is something that we have been denied and deprived of so long. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes even ourselves, we engage and help support and deny people that are self-determination to the people directly. And what this system does, as what Malcolm laid out, when they can't stop it, they will attempt to co-opt it, water it down, change it, make it something they need to be. And they would grab individuals or entities who, if they wanted to, let's say hypothetically speaking, if these different individuals, some people, if they had the interest of speaking for you, they couldn't. It's a foreign language. You follow what I'm saying? It's a foreign. This system has strategically, in regards to the legacy of the Black Panther Party, when they were unsuccessful, when the system was unsuccessful and straight out obliterating him. In other words, don't talk about it in the schools. In other words, we will bring some heat down on you if you even mention Chairman Free, if you even acknowledge him. And when the system was unsuccessful in that, in places like Menard Penitentiary, where they would give you 6 months added to your sentence if you have a picture of me or Chairman Free, in your property. When the people still have a love and admiration for the work of Chairman Freed, their next step is to do as what Malcolm said. They will attempt to co-opt it, water it down, change it, make it something they can be. And this is, in this case of that of Chairman Freed, Defense Against Amara Clark, the Black Panther Party, we have seen that as we see in so many other cases. And this year in particular, this state, they raised up foreign entities who either had a disdain or had an antagonistic relationship against Chairman Fred of the Black Panther Party or were non-supportive and raised these individuals up to be the spokespersons for this said legacy. And a lot of us said, well, let bygones be bygones, and certain people do not, maybe the system does not know who is out there, you know, carrying on the work, who's doing such and such, so on and forth. The ruling class does not allow that type of attack to go down when they're writing their history. They, you know, they know it is important who's, you know, who, from what perspective, position is summed up, with taking into account the contradictions such as race as well as class. But when it comes to our community, it seems somehow that when it comes to black people in particular fighting for self-determination, let's not make a big deal. Whether we grab a white left, a person from the community who cannot identify the black community, whether we grab a person who cannot, a person of a petty bourgeoisie class perspective who cannot really identify and relate, you know, since the word Chairman Fred, let's grab these forces to speak a foreign language. And even if it may be the slight change of one or two words, but it can change the whole spirit, the whole politic of such programs as the pre-breakfast program. You know what I'm saying? And this year in particular, there was a strategic attempt, as well as there have been so many strategic attempts by this system, to grab the University of Chicago, one of those powerful entities, not only in Chicago, but throughout the world, who has played a major role with imperialism internationally. You know, so talking about even in Chile, Pinochet, his cabinet, a lot of them was trained at the University of Chicago. The regime they brought in Iraq to replace Saddam Hussein, University of Chicago. The nucleus for the atom bomb, University of Chicago. Let us negate the present U.S. presidential administration, Barack Obama, University of Chicago, and to bring it back home, to bring it back domestically, right here in Chicago in the late '60s, the infamous Woodlawn experiments. The Woodlawn experiments was a crime epidemic was created, equivalent to in Rwanda with the Hutus and Tutsis, which was really not a case of fratricide, but a debt of implemented genocide, working through making it appear that a fratricide, but not the real culprits be exposed, such as the French and the Belgian imperialists, the role they played by creating havoc in Rwanda. And the University, the Woodlawn experiment in Chicago, where you've seen such entities as the University of Chicago, Sears and Roebuck, First National Bank, the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, funneling over $100 million cash money to the then Blackstone Rangers, and create had the Chicago Police Department, just like the then known Devil Disciples, do drive-bys in the Stones headquarters, and creating a crime epidemic where the property value was decreased and the black community was, you know, later on pushed out of that situation. That same entity, right, University of Chicago, attempted to have an event this December, December the 2nd to December the 7th, in which some of their major players, Tracy Matthews, Deasta Gates, and they grabbed certain individuals who may have come across Chairman Fred, or, you know what I'm saying, been in contact with Chairman Fred, and or individuals who may have been in the party for a brief, and I'm stretching it by that, Billy Dunbar, who happened to be in the party for a few seconds, literally, and grabbing these individuals and raising them up and putting them as a spokesperson and literally and politically trying to change history. You know what I'm saying? And people come with, and a lot of times we deal with absolutes. We come around, well, that person did know Chairman Fred. I mean, years from now, you might grab a million people that say they was on public transportation, on a bus ride with me. That does not put them in a position to be a spokesperson on the work of the POCC, the Black Panther Party Cubs. So we want to be very clear on what capacity did these individuals engage with that of Chairman Fred? Where was these individuals at when it was going down? Did they come out, you know, when it was safe to speak and listen to the words and terms that they do and how they directly contradict what Chairman Fred was about, what he represented? They even went so far as the state. They had grabbed entertainer Ryan Fest to be a part and parcel of this attempt to hijack the legacy of Chairman Fred of the Black Panther Party. And it's a lot of uproar about it right now. because we went and dealt with this contradiction. We went and exposed it. We dealt with it, and it's we exposed this contradiction, and a lot of people initially were their first emotional response was that of criticism, and some cases slander. Well, you know, well, we shouldn't disagree with the old argument. Don't disagree with each other in public. And we say we brought up the photos or some of the images or some of the caricatures that this the French who had just last 2 weeks ago, France had put out a statement warning people when they go to Chicago what areas not to come to Chicago and be careful about the crime. But somehow a contingent of French delegation came to Chicago right in on the south side of Chicago, working in collaboration with the University of Chicago under the auspices of art, under the auspices a tribute to Fred Hampton. You've seen caricatures of members of the Black Panther Party. People are you look at the imagery that they had of the depiction of Minister Huey P. Newton. It was a disgrace. The community it became a comedy show. It was nothing less than an attack on the legacy of the Black Panther Party, and it was strategic. We exposed it, and the people now, some of those that were involved in it, have come to acknowledge and unite. That was we respect y'all, the position that y'all took. We respect the Black Panther Party Cubs for not being liberal, and a lot of folks say they did not know to the detriment what was going on. And that's what we say about self-determination. We make it a point. When we go to different cities and go to speak and talk to different forces, I make it a point to go touch down with those in the valley. You know, when people come, when I go to Philadelphia, we make it mandatory once I go. Man, did y'all holler at Pam Africa? What's going on? What's the updates on the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the move now, and so on and so forth? What are the relevant discussions, the contradictions? You know, I'll give you a call. That person coming through town, so on and so forth. Because we know that there are other powerful entities that the real forces, authentic forces there are out-resourced by. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the fact is, it's not because, and I want to say this too, it's not because of a lack of work ethic that the authentic forces are out-resourced by. It's because there's a concerted, the state has a concerted effort to fund and to provide resources to who they want to be seen as the spokespersons. It's not by coincidence. Chicago, they raise up individuals, this guy Reverend Corey Brooks, Tyler Perry gave $98,000. If you're looking from outside, and you read the news, you think this is the person that's doing this and that. You think this is going on in Chicago. But people must take it upon themselves. And I told all these forces who later united with the criticism we raised and the contradictions that we exposed that we were not liberal about. I said, you have a responsibility. You, if nothing else, the community grapevine. It ain't hard to find out what's really going down in the hood. You know what people to touch down with, what type of work is going on. But to be brought in and just say, and co-sign a lot of these attacks, it's insulting, and it's something that cannot exist. We make it a point. Like I say, New Orleans, for example, New Orleans, in response to Hurricane America, we say we don't call it Hurricane Katrina. We say Katrina didn't kill nobody. We know that people like the soul survivors, a group of brothers and sisters who literally turned refrigerators and other items, kitchen sinks and stuff to survival tools, literally make makeshift boats. You're not going to hear about them on CNN News. Now, you will hear about different white left organizations and how they, the great white savior that came and saved the community. But the deal is, we have our ear to the ground. We have a coordinator down in New Orleans, Charlie Clark, who did 18 years in Angola. We got contact with the community. So it's important to touch down with the community to see what's really going down, not what the news is telling me, not what the ruling class media is telling me, not what these different handkerchief heads, these niggas can get up and tell us who's doing what.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But, you know, something that Brother Hakeem mentioned earlier, and I don't believe you were on at that point, and he said, I totally agree, and with that, we will discuss further as to how we can begin to implement such a thing more readily. And it is to begin to put more information into our communities, the kind of information, the type of, if one may wish to say propaganda, but definitely adequate information on an ongoing basis. For example, here in Philly, we had something called the Black Star newspaper. It would be published maybe once a month. But at least everybody knew for once a month you were going to get some pretty good information. And so look forward to that, that it was circulated in the community. Unfortunately, it folded. But nevertheless, this is what we're talking about now having to do today. We've had models for it because I think all of us will remember it, and you even see it a little bit today. The Nation of Islam still gets out there on the corners in different cities selling their newspapers. So there's a historical kind of reality to make certain that information is readily available in the community. Because like Brother Aki said earlier, anybody's not online. And we know at some point you're going to make sure you be online one way or the other. They're going to hook it up. You know, we have to really now start doing some of the old school kinds of stuff that, you know, those who came before us was doing. And we're talking about being on the corners, handing out leaflets, putting the leaflets on your car, you know, the front of your car, whatever. We've got to really begin to step this thing out to get the kind of information out that we want out. And if we don't, we're going to have a serious problem. Let me sidetrack just for one moment here, because I need to share this with you and with our family that's listening. Many of you know that recently we had a struggle, meaning the Million Women March in this movement, with a Negro named George Tillman, who was making a documentary on the Million Women March, and doing so in such a way was to, you know, really just create a real misrepresentation, and that puts it mildly. Well, we recently had another incident. And see, this is why we know these people be watching and paying close attention to see how the people are going to respond to stuff. And if you don't respond, they know, oh, yeah, we're going full force. Yes. We just had a situation where a group of primarily physicians, it sounded like they were from India, but they've been in the United States for quite a while. They started something called the Million Woman March for Endometriosis. Now, when we saw this, we said, okay, we're just going to chill and watch to see, you know, what they're going to do. So we did for several. So finally, we decided, okay, it's time to contact these people and let them know they have a problem. So we did so. And the first time we contacted them, they didn't even respond. Second time we contacted them, our message was a little stronger, so they finally responded. But this time, they responded via through their public relations person and then with a lawyer. Okay? So we, okay, let's rock and roll because we know this game. So we got on the phone and we talked with them. The lawyer was talking his little legal stuff about this and that and the other. And the bottom line is, if we do not protect what is rightfully ours, you can rest assured somebody else is going to do it. And the point being, going back to what you were saying, Chairman Fritz, these people were about to try to rewrite history. Because now they got the Million Woman March for Endometriosis, which includes every woman. See, they done screwed this thing up in such a way that they will appeal to an illness that many women have. Put the Million Woman March on it to make it seem like it's us, and then pull all these different races or groups of people in under the umbrella. It was very rude how they did this. So I'm taking that to say that the attempt to rewrite the story of Chairman Fred Hampton, the attempt to rewrite the story of so many of our people, you know, we have really got to be more adamant in shutting them down. And I'm telling you, brother, we recorded that whole dialogue with that lawyer and the organizers of that event. And what we told them was they better cease and desist right now, because if not, we were going to do two things. One, do a public campaign to let everybody know that, number one, we had nothing to do with this, and number two, they're not only exploiting us, but they're attempting to rape us intellectually.
Yes, indeed.
Well, the lawyer dude was really upset because we just kicked this behind. In fact, when we got to near the end of the dialogue, I told the doctor dude, I said, look, you know what? I don't even want to talk to the lawyer anymore because every time he opens his mouth, he makes things worse for y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. we ended up shutting them down because the reality is we have a trademark pending. That's just the reality, and there's no getting around it. Okay.
Yes.
But my point being, family, here's the real deal here. If we don't step up and say something, then these people will do whatever they can to take control of whatever they think we have. And again, we have to be a little more, I won't say, less politically correct. Okay, because as you just indicated, you know, sometimes when you say certain things and you got people saying, oh, you know, we shouldn't say that in public, or we shouldn't do this, we should try to be in solidarity. But what I've learned in these past 16 years in particular is this. If you are dealing with the element of treason where it impedes the progress of our people, then guess what? I will have to be politically incorrect because I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell. You see, enough is really enough. We can't keep co-signing these people.
No,
we can't see what you haven't seen, and I'm going to say, and I know you will. We just didn't get to it yet. The whole idea of the breakfast program. The fact that Negroes ran around and talked about the Rainbow Coalition. And then from the breakfast program, they then talked about what's the thing the government created, brother? It escapes me. I don't even remember this stuff anymore.
What, COINTELPRO?
No. When the government created the breakfast program.
WIC.
Well, something else that they created too. But after seeing the success of the Black Panther Party program, then they started some old thing. But my point being is that whenever they see our people utilizing the creativity that we always have, they then come and try to duplicate it. And then the problem I really have with this is we sit back and co-sign it. We sit back and push it. Sit back and promote it. And lastly, and I'm going to go back to you, Kim and Fred, and you all better listen carefully what I'm getting ready to say to you. In a minute, and Dr. Randy Short will follow up later on this, in a minute you're going to see more Planned Parenthood stuff in these churches.
No doubt.
At some point, we'll elaborate, and this is what I'm saying, how people, we allow these people to do things. We see it when they do it, and a lot of our folks sit back and just watch it and don't say anything and definitely don't do anything, and as a result, things get even worse. And I'm saying for those of you who understand the spirit that I'm speaking from when in, enough of that. Stand up, speak out. If somebody don't like it, too bad. Simple as that.
Right on. This self-determination is so important, and if we're not careful, I mean, we have a general. I mean, this system, they don't have you to believe under the impression that Black people came and used the bathroom by themselves. I mean, let alone organize a free breakfast program. And a lot of people, you know what I'm saying, give another example. Just look at any phenomena, any entity, rock and roll, blues, jazz, you can go to a rock and roll concert, you have some serious debate with people about who created rock and roll or jazz or blues. And this is not no long time ago entity. We're not even going to the area of struggle. We're not even going to the area of people's rising up, you know what I'm saying, and fighting on their own terms. For self-determination, I'm talking about different entities of music, different genres of music. You have people that will debate with you. In fact, I told somebody, I said, it's going to be years down the road. You're going to have some serious debate with your children or grandchildren if that Eminem, the white boy, is one of really created hip-hop. In fact, he just came out with a record entitled Rap God. This is the Eminem. Rap God. But it must also be understood, be tied into the discussion of debt of power. And this system that we subjected to still, even though people say this is a post-racial society, it was birthed And this is not a subjective race position. It's a political summation of that. What it is white power. It's a system where in his position of saying rap God, he's able, and you listen to some of the lyrics in the song where he's actually using the word fag. He goes in other terms that if any black artist came anywhere close to saying some of the derogatory terms he said, they will be sure. Copping pleas. They will be doing more apologies than the comedian Tracy Morgan. They will be doing benefits for the gay rights organization, so on and so forth. But the deal is under white power, these
right.
individuals have the democratic space to do these type of the really a freedom of expression. Everything else that the Constitution claims, you know, claims as a community, they have this right. And the deal is that our community, we are told in one way or another, whether it be by banning them, whether it be by fining them, whether it be by firing at them, whether it be locking them up, shooting them down, stringing them out on drawers, whether it be attacking them, whether it be attacking Billie Holiday one way, attacking Chuck Berry in another way.
Right.
Whether it be by glorifying Elvis Presley, but you know, with his marriage at the age that his wife was when he married her, and, you know, saying negating that, or Buddy Holly, another white representative, but again raising them up where you can see with a whole entity of rock and roll.
Right.
You don't know about the Chuck Berrys. The audacity and the arrogance for Elvis Presley to be even referred to as the king of rock and roll, and so even within our struggles. Where the arrogance can be raised amongst different forces who may have been around certain people. You got some cases where individuals pop up who were not even on the scene. They had this situation at the University of Chicago where they raised up Tracy Matthews, who some people even are under the impression she was in the Black Panther Party. They raised up these individuals, Theastic Gates, they weren't even born. One of these only born in Black Panther Party existed, and was being a spokesperson for the Black Panther Party. And we have to be extremely cautious and careful with this here. Again, we say, a lot of times we engage in liberalism, well, they mean well. Well, this is how we got to get the word out. But at what expense? If you don't have an example of people that fall for you, it was a TV show I watched one time, and the guy was explaining about breeding horses. And he was saying the problems with breeding an orphan horse. He said an orphan horse is a problem, being that the horse does not have an example of seeing a horse in front of him on how he's supposed to operate. Imagine that with an entire people. Imagine that with a generation of not having an example of somebody that came from their community of not understanding that, no, it was a 14 to 24-year-old brothers and sisters that stood up on their own terms and had the free breakfast program. Imagine that, not knowing about that. Imagine your only frame of reference is, the only time that you made any leaps in your community is when you voted for some person that may have felt sorry for you, or some of the state gave you some sort of job because you did not present a threat. That is not only demoralizing; it's defeatism. You creating a whole. In some cases, you creating a punk people. You need examples of where people can stand and speak in their own for their own terms. It's, again, that precious entity where we've been denied and deprived of that of self determination.
Well, certainly, as we now approach a so-called new year, it is very clear that it is time to make some moves that are perhaps well past due. Before we move on in the next phase of this, and it looks like we have maybe about 20 minutes left, the one thing I want to do is connect a few dots, Chandler Fred, as we often do. And I wanted to let you know that a few days ago, I was able to review an article that talked about a teacher's village that is being built in Newark, New Jersey, a whole block that is pretty much being constructed for teachers. And my point is that as we have reviewed over the past months, we've talked about what's going on in Chicago and Chi-Town, with how they are just totally, you know, revamping a lot of stuff. The same thing's going on here in Philly with the closing of schools, both in Chicago. Oh, by the way, they're getting ready to close 6 more in Philly. They closed 28 a few months ago. There's 6 more now slated to be closed. And from what I was told the other day, they plan to do that on an ongoing basis, 6 at a time over a period of time. The bottom line is they're doing it in Chicago. We see what's going on in Detroit. They just a few years prior to those 3 states, they were doing in D.C. and Baltimore. The bottom line is, again, we see what is getting ready to happen. And at some point, I would strongly suggest and think that, I mean, what is our response going to be? And, family, I'm raising this question to you all as well. To remind you, the chat room is open, so you can certainly go there, too. But what we want to engage in, what are we going to do? We keep talking about these problems. We've been talking about it here on New Day for quite a while. And, again, connecting the dots. As Chairman Fred often says, it's the same suspects. The same people usually are associated with the behavior and the types of things that we're seeing. Gentrification, I mean, that puts it mildly. These people are moving. Here in Philly, 2035 is the name of the game. And they've been playing it now for 20 years. So they really are in full steam now. The same thing is happening in other cities as well, as we just indicated. So, Chairman Fear, with that said, what are we going to do? What do you foresee or propose or suggest as a people that we need to do to begin to address some of these things that we are talking about?
Well, I definitely want to put in this, put in context that we our struggle to refer to it is what we're going to continue to do, because I can, and not that we are satisfied with the work that we do, that we engaged in, but it's important that we continue to acknowledge, even though it may not, you know, we definitely are not at the stage in the game that we desire to be at, because we're not free. We are not free. However, we must lay out that we have that we have the skeleton, we have the prototype, we have examples that we are here engaging in, whether it be the campaigns that we right now, the Feed Them All, we are here from Long Beach, California to Chicago, organizing programs, the people on their own terms, you know what I'm saying, providing food to the community, whether it be campaigns that we fight on a day-to-day basis about addressing the rampant police terrorism, and whether it be the case of addressing the mass closing of the schools and the continued attack via the colonial schools. I think we got to let people know that we're here, even if the fact that the ruling class does not acknowledge out here, that, you know what I'm saying, and stress to people that we are out here and that there's a place, there's a skeleton, but we need the people to flesh it out. We need their hearts.
Right.
We need the hearts and the minds of the people. You know what I'm saying? We got the skeleton. You know what I'm saying? But we, again, without the people, it's, you know what I'm saying, it's nothing more, you know, it's nothing more than a skeleton. So we got to keep, mm-hmm. we got to intensify our tactics, we got to intensify our campaigns to be consistent
mm-hmm.
out there. We got to continue to do what Chairman Fred said. We got to continue to produce leaders, so you know what I'm saying, the people can pick this up. But again, stressing it to the people that we are here, and that we are not a reactionary force. That we are not just simply waiting on the state to come with certain attacks. We're gonna lay out some things to the people. We have laid out some things to the people that
mm-hmm.
when they go down, a lot of people may not believe it. But like I said, perfect example the other day. We said a while ago about this whole intent by the University of Chicago, what their plan was, about this program, what they're talking about, tribute to Fred Hampton. Now, we laid out a position. It was an unpopular position with a lot of people. However, since that, the people have brought more and more information about consistent, you know what I'm saying, about not only the attack on the Black Panther Party, but attack on different street organizations, different major players, such as that of Gary Sluckner, who was previously with the World Health Organization, his role, the ceasefire group, so on and so forth. We consistent with our position. A lot of these contradictions, were, you know what I'm saying, constantly rise up. The people say, wait a minute, these forces were saying this when this was an unpopular position. You talk about what's happening right there in Philadelphia with the school closes, attack on the continued miseducation on the community. Deal is,
right.
We have so many forces that was right there in Philadelphia that was taking on exposing such individuals as Paul Vallis, who was previously with Chicago Public Schools, then later Philadelphia, then later New Orleans, and then later in Haiti, and it just been brought back to Chicago to run for lieutenant governor with Governor Quinn. So when these attacks are happening now, people are recognizing these things, but then we have a resume. We have a resume where people say, man, we told, no, not saying some sort of cocky, egotistical way, we told you so, but we're saying, listen, we need the people to be armed with a politics, to be equipped with a knowledge. Say, listen here, this ain't no personal thing we're talking about these individuals. We want you to be able to see these signs coming. You know what I'm saying? We want to be able to provide these so we see it, we can call a question and make it uncomfortable. So we don't care if it comes through a Sambo or Uncle Sam. We don't care if it comes through a gringo or a Negro. We don't care if the state itself comes through in Brooklyn talking about taking a property from the community. We're going to not only challenge that, we're going to challenge when you bring in a Pied Piper named Sean Slave Z. Carter to say, you know, say he's going to invest in this basketball stadium. We don't. We gonna say no. We not gonna get caught up with that. Clapping for him, so y'all can still displace our people out of the community. We gonna call this question. We don't care who it is. You know what I'm saying? Who they're associated with. And we understand that historically, this is not the first time that you have used people that look like us. In some cases, they may have been trained to talk like us. But we say, man, if these individuals are not out here dealing with the contradictions that we get to deal with on a day-to-day basis, they can't speak for us. We understand historically when y'all came when the Portuguese and the Spaniards and the English and everybody else came over to kidnap us from Africa. We knew they used they grabbed some the Negro African kings then, the colored kings then, to help collaborate with kidnapping us from Africa. So this ain't no new entity, and we gonna call that question. So we can say we can look at a prototype. Look at the prototype that they have done to us. Look at they have used chemical biological warfare on us, whether it was the Tuskegee experiments or what they just admitted recently with the United States government engaged in Guatemala. They, at their own mouth, they admitted what they said in Guatemala. The United States government just admitted they had a program to implement diseases in the Guatemalan community to the point that they had infected certain prostitutes with certain diseases. When that didn't work, they upped the ante until they were scraped the bone and the skin of the potential victims, and that didn't work. They went so far as to take needles and shoot in the spine, directly shooting the spine of the people, the desired diseases that they want the people to be infected with. And we say, right. And it's with Chairman Mao say it's terrible, but it's fine, because we have to expose the contradictions, to force them to bring these contradictions out, because the deal is we are under attack, but it's going down under such euphemisms. Let's stop playing this word game. Let's stop playing these schematics of calling the war on drugs, war on guns. Let's get some upfront about this here. Let's start using the term political prisoner. You know what I'm saying? Let's start being very clear. No, let's start saying stars. What happened to Lil James down the street? What happened to Mumia Abu-Jamal? What happened to Move Nine? What happened to Rochelle St. Q. McGee? They were kidnapped. They were locked up. They were kidnapped. Where they at? They're in concentration camp. Let's stop whispering about this type of discussion. Let's stop being upfront about, oh, no, what they having? Everybody's going to commemorate Fred. No. There's another entity. They've created a program to hijack the legacy of Chairman Fred. Let's stop being upfront about it. Well, who's going along with it? Some of the same individuals? Well, maybe they don't know. No. Go back and look at their history. Some of these same liberal forces. Like I told a lot of people are incorrectly assessed as being sellouts. A lot of people are incorrectly assessed as being sellouts. If you look back historically, take an objective analysis of their history, they are consistent. They are consistent. You know, they are consistent. A lot of cats ain't turned coast. They've been consistent with their position all the time. And you listen to their speeches, you listen to the words, you look at who grabbed them. I told one guy with a coalition with us, I said, man, you notice every time we do something, protest and white folks come get you, man? He said, yeah. And he thought it was something to be proud about. I said, they always come grab you. They come pick you out the crowd. He said, yeah, you notice that too, Chad? I said, yeah, you don't notice that? They see something in you, or they see something that's not in you, like a backbone, a principle. You know what I'm saying? He has a consistent history. So we have to start being clear on this. Let's start being honest. The forces who the system raises up for us is our spokespersons, whether it be in music, whether it be, you know, whether it be in the struggle, whether it be in athletics. Look at the psychological profile of these individuals. But we keep on thinking, well, maybe they're going to become old and they'll learn. Maybe we can perform an exorcism on them, bring it, you know what I'm saying, or we can enlighten them. No, let's start being clear. Let's start having some honest discussions on who is who, you know, and recognize that and move accordingly.
Well, family, we are coming down to our last few moments, and what we're going to do is come to you if you have a question for Chairman Fred or a comment. We're going to do that for a few minutes, but before we do, just to point out that I certainly concur with Chairman Fred in regards to we got to continue to do what we're doing, and it does make a difference. I mean, it's not where we would like for it to be, obviously, for many of us, but some things have, in fact, made a difference. The fact that Mumia Abdul-Jamal is no longer on death row, obviously, that's a difference. We now have to go to the next step, of course, and bring him home altogether, but still, he is no longer on death row. And with that said, we want to remind all of you that this weekend here in Philadelphia there have been activities going on. There will be another activity tomorrow. And it's leading up really for the April 24th major, major thing that's going to happen here in Philly for Mumia. We're going to have Sister Pam Africa on very soon to give you some updates on what went on this weekend, but certainly to get everyone prepared for April 24th. Again, what Chairman Freer has indicated and what I've said and Brother Lee, Brother Haki, and others is that we have to continue to organize. And with that, now intensify our organizing. You know,
yes,
we have to step it up. Before we go back to Chairman Fred and to you all who may have a question or comment, we wanted to share just a few words. We talked about Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Well, now we're going to hear a bit from him.
Another year, another change. On the move, dear sisters, brothers, comrades, and friends. My message to you this year is simple. First, thank you. And second, we still ain't free. Never underestimate the power of our movement to make things happen. When we organize, when we struggle, we make change. When we gather, when we demand, we create change. Never doubt that. Never doubt the power of the people, united and committed. If you heard me speak before, you know that I've said I don't believe in courts or the system. What's there to believe in? But I do believe in the people. I do believe in people's movements. We are proof of that. I know it may not be easy, but it is right. When you see an injustice and do nothing, you're okaying that injustice. You're accepting it. When you say no, you send ripples throughout the world. Come together. Work together. Build. And we will make freedom inevitable. I love you all. On the move. Long live John Africa. From Imprisoned Nation, this is your brother, Mumia Abdul-Jamal. These come.
We love you also. Free Mumia Abdul-Jamal, free them all. Right on.
Wow. I mean, that really kind of summarizes what we've been talking about, you know. All right, family, we're going to take a few calls. We don't have a lot of time, but we certainly want to give a few of you an opportunity to close us out tonight. Caller, we're going to go to you at 8872. I'm going to open up your mic. Do you have a comment or a question for us tonight? 8872, your mic is open.
Yeah, for Chairman, he's the one that's out from Florida.
I'm based in Chicago. Chicago, they call it Chirac. I'm based in Chicago. I'm from Africa, but I'm based in Chicago.
Oh, okay, okay. Because there's one here in the state of Florida, you know. And I was wondering if you were that one. Anyway, what my question is. We have people out here that's being targeted by either our military, our government, you know, this is a nightmare, and if people don't start rising up against this, there's going to be even more, you know, we'll all be chipped, and you got the, you know, so I just wanted to ask about that, you know, what are you going to do for people like you? Are you discussing these issues of targeted individuals? and I can give you some websites. You can go to one of them is stopthecrime.net, freedomfchs.com, and listen to those people. You know,
freedom what?
Because it can happen to all of us.
The second website you mentioned, sister. The second website, freedom what?
Freedom F is in Frank.
Huh?
Frank Charlie Henry Sam, FCHS.com.
Okay.
Freedom from covert harassment and surveillance.
Right.
Let me just ask a question, though, sister, and again. The thing that I have to always kind of be very upfront about, and that is this. Living in America, especially if you have some melanin that is of a higher level or is more recognizable, we, of course, are always under attack. But in reality, those who really speak out against that are really under greater attack. Now, some may not want to hear that or believe that, but it is true as far as I'm concerned. And so the fact is when we work with minimum, sometimes limited, sometimes no resources, sometimes you have to look at prioritizing. Now, again, that's not something that a lot of people really want to hear or deal with. But again, it's reality. So my question would have to be, while I know there are many people who are targeted amongst our people, as a whole, we are all targeted, some more so than others, but if you have a person or a people who are putting their life on the line, and I mean literally, would one not think that maybe if that person gets jammed, should there not be a bit more time and attention put to that? That's just a question. Because I don't have any problems with taking my position on it. But it's a question to whoever may wish to respond to that.
So, you gonna respond to that, sister? Hello.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you care to respond to that? Perhaps not.
Okay.
Chairman Fred, would you care to respond to that? And again, before you do, Chairman Fred, family, please understand, I say that with much love. I say
that
with much love and with much respect.
No doubt. The deal is, and I struggle to, we must struggle to put things in a correct context, correct political context, and the fact is there's a war being waged upon us. And the reality is that there is a war waged on us in every imaginable and unimaginable way. They throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at us, and we must struggle to grasp, to understand it, and not just talk about it in some sort of cliche type of way during February when Black History Month comes around, or election time. And with that being said, with that general war being waged on through chemical biological warfare, through the schools, through political prisoners, you name it, no doubt about it. Let's say it, not just from a morality sense, but of a tactical sense of encouraging others up the ante. You know, again, like putting gas in the car. We want to encourage, provide some incentives to people. You know, say even the Chairman Fred say, everybody should be guilty of at least committing a revolutionary act. You know what I'm saying? So even if you're not a revolutionary, we must understand that, you know what I'm saying, that you cannot take a neutral position. And that, you know, if you our people, you put some work in. And, you know what I'm saying? And again, because a lot of times, the reality is, people get involved and work and become conscious one of three ways: inspiration, aspiration, or desperation. And the deal is, not just we start looking at this in a political sense. We can and we pick certain campaigns even to, that they can broaden the understanding of the overall war, how it impacts us as a people. Because a lot of times we cannot, a lot of times we see cases where individuals become reactionary and engage in what we call ambulance chasing. I remember one time when I was locked up, it was a struggle with some forces. A guy had got shot by the police. And I was struggling with the forces. I said, listen, I said, make sure you go put an inch to the ground on the campaign. But these forces took a position that, no, we're going to go out there, we're going to save the world. We're going to engage in, a certain amount of arrogance that we ain't not going to talk to the force who got shot by the police. So when they done, when they grabbed the situation, the next day, the guy who got shot, he was on the news of the police attacking the walls of the people, saying, no, I ain't got no problem with this. He really was a victim of the Stockholm Syndrome. He identified with the oppressors. So it's important that you just don't take for granted, because we can't say that there's a war being waged on us in one breath, and the next breath do not acknowledge that we have some casualties of war, not acknowledge that we have some individuals in Stockholm also. And we must acknowledge that. We are out resourced, and we had to pick our moves. Before I was released out of prison, it was certain guys. The state made it very clear to me: if we see you talk, you are a problem. They told me point blank. So they would have repercussions laid down on me if I talk to different guys about just even giving them a book. They used to call them the Fred Hampton rules. The police actually called them this in prison. And I remember, when I was two situations in particular stand out in my mind. The different organizations would alternate on who they would ask to get in the cell with me, aid and assist on security, as well as that I politicized them. So there was a case one time I was in this place, Joliet. Joliet was not a prison that was known for its resistance, and because it was a real transient type prison, because cats were constantly being transferred, constantly moving around. There was no stability in this particular place. So one of the organizations they recommended that guy come inside the cell with me, and I said no. I'm coming too close to the outdate, and I said dude can be a liability. So they was like, no man, he's from out of town. Chan, won't you work with him? I said it's nothing personal, but I said I can't afford the luxury right now. And he was like, man, cause I said nothing against him. I said the stakes are too high right now. And anyway. They kind of got upset with me about it, you know what I'm saying? And anyway, he ended up doing what they call dry snitching on one of their leadership. And I mean by dry snitching, for those who don't know, it's where you tell without directly telling. You don't articulate that you snitching. And they used him to be the vamp on somebody who they wanted to get. And they said, man, Chan, we understand what you were saying. I said, it's nothing personal, but we must understand that there are certain moves we cannot afford to make. And it was another case where I had a couple of books, and one guy said, well, why don't you get a brother down and give him some? I said, that guy's a comedy, he's a joke, he jokes the police a lot. I said, man, I cannot. I said, he doesn't even know the danger. He doesn't even know how dangerous he is. I can't afford the luxury. I said, I'm picking my moves. And I said, man, you must understand, we got to pick. Are we playing to win? This is not no personal thing. We must understand the political consequences and repercussions that we are dealing with in this war. So pick our moves. I said, certain cases we can use that can be used as examples. We done thrust certain people out. I said, okay, you be the prototype for this case. Now, once we get you, we're going to expose all this. So we must, and it's hard. War is it's difficult. It's scientific, and it's hurting. And we got to check our emotions as opposed to our emotions check us. We're playing to win. We're not playing for no personality contest. We're not playing for who likes us. Brother told me yesterday, say, Chairman, after what happened at the event, we had exposed some individuals at this University of Chicago created event, the Hijack Chairman Fred Legacy. Some guy called this guy and said, man, your guy Fred Jr., man, he's not making, you need to watch himself because he's endangering some powerful people's money, and he's not making very many friends. The brother responded to him and said, man, I don't think Chairman Fred is fighting for friends. I think he's fighting for freedom. I said, my man, right on.
Mm-hmm. Well, family, unfortunately, we have run out of time. time. We've been talking to Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Of course, we've been paying tribute to Chairman Fred Hampton and to Mark Clark. We want to thank all of you for joining us tonight, and we will continue the dialogue very soon. Chairman Fred, we just got 1 or 2 minutes left. Please give us your website information and email information.
www.chairmanfredjr.blogspot.com www.chairmanfredjr.blogspot.com Email Chairman Fred Jr., chairmanfredjr@gmail.com I'm on Facebook at The Real Chairman Fred Jr. Also, we can be contacted at WhoEBPOCC. Keep Russell Maroon Schultz, Mafunde Lake, Dr. Matula Shakur, Imam Jamil Alameen, Attorney Lynn Stewart, Mumia Abu Jamal, Move 9, Hugo Pinero, Rochelle St. Cube McGee, Jerry Odinga Dunnigan, Leonard Peltier, the case of Asada Shakur, your brother, the sister down the street, the people in general, on your minds and your hearts, on a consistent basis. And what's our call? Free them all.
All right, family, and again, we've been talking with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. I want to thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day Resurrection Liberation. We will be back next week. We're going to continue more of this real talk, speaking truth to power, as you well know. We're going to leave you at this point, though, as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there could never, ever, ever be any real peace until there's truly justice. There can be no Hotep until there is Ma'at justice. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
No justice, no peace. Right on.
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you, officials. Thank the people in general. Right on.
Absolutely. All right, family, we're out. We will be back again in 2 days. We may do another special edition. At any rate, we thank you all again and continue to pass the word about New Day Resurrection Liberation. Sisters, there's now a movement for you. We're going to now see who's really who and what is really what, because we are about to make something happen, particularly for our sisters, for the first time in contemporary history. A movement, a global movement for all women and girls of African descent. Not a sorority, not a club, a real movement. Tutanana.